Jeff Timmer is former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Mark Brewer is former chair of the Michigan Democrats. And this is a republic, if you can keep it, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
I'm Jeff Timmer, and this is a republic if you can keep it.
I'm Mark Brewer. Joining us in a few minutes will be Detroit public relations and political consultant Darcy McConnell.
But first, let's start, as we do, with some legitimate political discourse. Mark, certainly since our last podcast last week, we've had a disruption of the entire post-World War II international security system with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And then last night, we had President Biden's first State of the Union address. And these two events certainly have the potential to kind of cause a reset or tremendously affect our national politics, but also politics here in Michigan.
I think that's right, Jeff. And I want to be very careful here and very sensitive to what's going on in Ukraine. But I do think that it will have some positive political impact for Biden. The way he's handled it so far, frankly, stands in at least sharp contrast to the perception of what happened when we pulled out of Afghanistan. And that looked chaotic and problematic. It looked like there was no planning. Whereas now in this situation, I think Biden has done an extraordinary job with his people behind the scenes working for months to build the solidarity that we have seen in response. You know, I thought their strategy of releasing the intelligence about what Putin was going to do and working behind the scenes. I mean, these sanctions that are being imposed are extraordinary. We are seeing things out of Europe, Germany. So basically, we're going to rearm, and we are going to be much more active in the defense of democracy. Heck, they even got Switzerland to participate in these sanctions. So again, I want to be very respectful here. Nobody is happy about this war, but I think Biden has handled it well so far, which I think will redound to his political benefit. And I think he furthered that with the State of the Union speech last night. Now, look, his numbers are still not good, but you know, those last 10 days, I think politically has been good for him, even though he's not been able to talk about the domestic agenda that much that he wants to focus on. And we heard a lot of that last night. So I think, again, kudos for, I think, an outstanding performance by the president in the last 10 days. We'll see where it goes from here. Is it a beginning of a reset and a boost in his approval numbers, which will help him and the Democrats politically? That remains to be seen. But I think he's at least laid the foundation for that. What do you think, Jeff?
And one thing that's been so astounding and tremendous to watch is the resolve and the bravery of the Ukrainian people during this last week. And, you know, the fact that democracy has been so perilous here in our country for the last year, 15 months since the November 2020 election, you know, we're seeing a lesson in what democracy means, people willing to fight for it, willing to die for it. We're seeing old ladies standing in front of tanks and lighting Molotov cocktails. You know, we're seeing people come out into the streets and just block the streets en masse in front of standing in front of the Russian troops and tanks. And the Russians they clearly weren't prepared for this kind of some of it is kind of like a passive resistance. You know, just standing in front of the tanks. Now they might be standing there, and their cousins come up and throw the Molotov cocktails. I don't know, but they're clearly not prepared for this kind of asymmetrical warfare. And we're watching this here in the country in getting a lesson in what democracy means, perhaps at a time when we most need it.
Yeah, well, there certainly isn't Soviet tanks rolling into Hungary in 1956 or in Czechoslovakia in 68. It is remarkable to see. I mean, we're still very early on here in this war, and I'm really worried that Putin could really double or triple down in terms of the tactics. Looks like we're headed for sieges, and we could see a real increase in the lethality of the weapons being used. But you're right, Jeff. So far, it's been remarkable. Tribute to the people of Ukraine. Let me pivot though, if I can, Jeff. I want to ask you about something. You know, yesterday, we're now in the State of the Union, but we had a number of special elections here in Michigan and around the country. And can we read anything into those elections about Trump's power or status inside the Republican Party? What do you think?
Well, this is my advice to reporters and editors who write headlines. Stop writing anything that says Trump's power on the Republican Party and his hold on the Republican Party is diminishing, because it is not. All the evidence is to the contrary. The people who won yesterday are bona fide Trump kooks. They won everywhere. Everybody that Trump endorsed won in Texas, in Michigan, the candidates who tried to be the Trumpiest, craziest, tinfoil hat, urine drinking to ward off COVID kooks are the ones who won. In the Macomb County, the Shelby Township special election for the state house, in Kent County, there's the Republican who won the nomination for the state legislative special election there. His daughter sent out a message to voters, urging them not to vote for her dad because he's physically abusive and generally unstable. And think about this. This is his daughter saying, don't vote for my dad. She said, for the love of God, don't vote for my father, was her direct quote. And the Republicans looked at that and said, what does she know? He must be my kind of guy. And that's who won the election.
Well, same thing over in Macomb, you know, my stomping ground. We saw the candidate who won, McCoskey, was Trump endorsed, and he beat an establishment Republican name in Macomb County, the wife of Stan Grott. I mean, Grott is like Mr. Macomb Republican. He's been chair of that congressional district, Jeff, for how many decades now, right?
Oh, yeah, forever.
Real power there. But his spouse lost to McCoskey, who's a Trump true believer, was endorsed by the Macomb County party chair, who is one of the most over-the-top Trump supporters in the state. So I agree with you. I think these reporters are writing more about their hopes than the actual facts about Trump's influence, because it's still apparently very strong, not just in Michigan, but nationally.
Yeah, and we saw this just kind of shifting to a dynamic in one of the statewide races. In the convention battle in the Republican Party for Attorney General, Trump sent out a letter this last weekend that was one of the most eviscerating things that I've ever seen. Trump disemboweled former Speaker Tom Leonard in writing, in his urging the delegates at the convention to vote for Matt DiPerno. I mean, what he effectively said, that the reason he lost and that humanity is in peril and that Democrats are cannibalizing babies is because of Tom Leonard. And that kind of, it's easy for a sane person, which most people are sane, and they look at something like that and think, oh, that's crazy. Who's going to believe that? I'll tell you who's going to believe it is the delegates at the Republican endorsement convention on April 23rd. Tom Leonard might as well stop running. Matt DiPerno has that race won. It's a slam dunk. The race this fall is going to be Dana Nessel, the incumbent attorney general, against Trump, big lie accolade, Matt DiPerno.
Yeah, no, I think you're right in terms of that assessment. I think that also explains why you saw Perry Johnson jump on the DiPerno bandwagon this week, right? I mean, he comes across in his Super Bowl ad that we talked about as trying to be more of a Steiner-like character. But obviously, he sees which way the wind's blowing. And now he's a big DiPerno supporter. And he urges the other Republican candidates for governor to get behind DiPerno. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that shows you exactly how much Trump's strength and hold in the Republican Party has diminished. It hasn't.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to one other topic, because this would have been the big news that we'd be talking about the whole time here, Jeff, but for all this other stuff, President Biden kept his promise and has nominated the first African-American female to the United States Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Terrific resume. Going to be a great justice in my view. But again, with the war and all these other things, hasn't gotten much attention. So what's your assessment? You think it's going to have a political impact, Biden keeping his promise in this way?
I think that it will have a somewhat of a political impact. The fact that he kept the promise will have less of an impact than if he hadn't kept the promise. I think if he had nominated somebody other than an African-American woman, it would have been, you know, the wheels came off of Biden's car at that moment. But the fact that he followed through on his promise, I think, is going to be received very positively in African-American circles and in the voting coalition within the Democratic Party. But also, you know, I think it's nominating somebody like her, young, very, I was watched the, her kind of the announcement, you know, she, her remarks, she was very likable, very personable. I think that, it's setting up what I think was likely to be a contentious, nominating, confirmation process because of the divide in our politics. But given the situation in Ukraine right now, and given the fact that she's going to be the third, progressive or liberal vote on the court, in the face of six, Republican appointed, justices, I think maybe some of the fight is coming out of this. And I think that she's the kind of candidate and who's going to be appealing to the Susan Collinses and to the Lisa Murkowskis, to the Mitt Romneys and to the Lindsey Graham, even the folks who've been very involved in these judiciary battles. I think that given all that's going on and given how this isn't the tipping point for the conservatives or liberals controlling the direction of the court, I think some of the fight has gone out of the confirmation battle.
Yeah, even though I'm going to watch it very closely, because I think this does give some of those Republicans an opportunity. Look, she was a public defender, so they can talk about criminal justice, crime. Are they going to raise, you know, critical race theory? Are they going to raise affirmative action? I mean, are some of these folks who are running for reelection going to use this as an opportunity to engage in that kind of racial, racist demagoguery that they may think helps them in their election campaigns? I think you're right, Jeff. I think some of the steam has gone out given other events, but I think this is going to be irresistible to some of these folks in the Republican Party.
I know the answer to your question. I know what's going to happen in September and October when it comes to campaigns. If the Republicans have the chance to use racist dog whistles, guess what? They're going to. And they're not even going to be that much of a dog whistle. Most of them are going to start saying it out loud, as Mitch McConnell did in his first reaction to her nomination. Instead of talking about, you know, her background in protecting voting rights, for instance, and civil rights, he talked about her record soft on crime. Right. Crime in the context of a black judicial nominee is not an accident. Mitch McConnell is not a person who chooses his word, who just casually says something. He chooses his words very carefully, and he chose those words for a reason. He just had the presence of mind not to stand in front of a Confederate flag when he made his remarks like he did, you know, 20 or 30 years ago.
Right, and that's a racist appeal we've seen for decades, right? Willie Horton. Remember, we had Governor Dukakis on a few months ago, a victim of that kind of racist trope, and I think you're right. And it's now more open than it's ever been, sadly, for the country and I think for the election next fall.
Mark and Jeff talk Detroit politics with public relations and political consultant Darcy McConnell. After these messages on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience accurately measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and other federal, state, and local issues. Epic MRA is one of the most quoted polling firms in the country. Clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, local governments, labor unions, interest groups and businesses throughout Michigan. Whether it's measuring voter opinion about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation can earn voter approval, Epic MRA is known as the go-to Michigan pollster. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Joining the conversation this week is one of the state's most respected public relations and political consultants, Darcy McConnell. A graduate of the University of Michigan, McConnell is no stranger to local government and politics. As president and CEO of Detroit-based McConnell Communications, Inc., she routinely works with local municipalities and politicians. And in 2020, she was appointed to the Grosse Pointe Park City Council, the first African-American to serve.
Darcy has owned and operated her public relations business for 18 years. Prior to that, she spent 14 years as a newspaper reporter across Michigan, as well as in Washington, D.C. Her personal passion is making a difference in the lives of young people through mentoring and other opportunities.
Darcy, thanks for being here this week.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, there's certainly been a tremendous amount of news. We've all been focused on international news. And last night, the country focused on President Biden giving his first State of the Union address. And so why don't we start maybe with your thoughts on some of these big picture events and happenings and how they impact politics and have potential to impact our politics and campaigns here in Michigan this year.
Well, I mean, certainly we saw as it relates to politics with the Supreme Court choice, the president's Supreme Court choice, the international events sucked all the oxygen out of the room. I mean, this is a huge deal, the first African-American female, and it's like a footnote. So, that's significant. I think just emotionally, it impacts us. It kind of takes over our world. And it can just distract us from everything else that's going on. We can become consumed by it, traumatized by it. And so that may make us less inclined to really think about the local school board race or the 13th district or whatever it is.
Sure. Well, I saw you mentioned the nomination of Ketanji Brown Jackson to be the first Black female on the Supreme Court. I saw this afternoon that Senate Judiciary Chair Dick Durbin has announced a series of four hearings that will begin in like less than 3 weeks. And so they're going to be moving very quickly with this confirmation process. And you're right. I mean, as I was thinking about the big events of the week, I didn't even think of that yet. It is. It's absent the land war in Europe. Right. That would have been the major news that we were all thinking of. It's certainly, as the war plays out, and we don't know exactly what's going to be happening here in the next weeks, let alone months. But the Supreme Court is going to play a tremendous role in the context of our election this year. We've got the decision, the Texas decision that could overturn Roe as this nominee is being considered and being vetted and being confirmed. So there's a lot of focus there on Supreme Court politics and judicial politics that could be impacting our election.
Absolutely. And the courts have certainly been sort of the key piece or the key remedy for a while now. And, I think that's why Republicans said, OK, this is our lane we're going to focus on. And, we're still feeling the effects of that, frankly.
Yeah, I think with the Supreme Court now, I think she will get confirmed. We'll see how close it is.
Okay.
She's she was a Breyer clerk in addition to her stellar resume beyond that, but she's likely to be a dissenter for a while. But the great thing for us progressives is that she's relatively young and she can be on the court for 30 years or more and hopefully in a place where she can turn her dissents into majority opinions at some point down the road. But, Darcy, you've been in politics a long time. You're a heck of a communications professional. What do you think the impact of that nomination is? Let's focus on that. Biden made a promise that
Correct.
He would appoint the first female African-American justice, and he Correct. Has kept that promise. What's that? Is there going to be a political impact of that this fall? What do you think?
Well, I hope so. I mean, again, we always seem to have this disconnect, though, when it comes to the judiciary and whatever race it is. Like, we've always tried to make that argument about it matters about the Supreme Court. And nobody wants to hear that. They don't care about that stuff. So that's the challenge of it. But, you know, certainly you can run all day and talk about the fact that he made this promise back in South Carolina. And, you know, Black women helped get him in there. And so he delivered on that. And, we know, Black women are significant voting bloc, voting base that have helped and, you know, candidates win. So I think it can be helpful. I just feel like there's still some degree of disconnect, generally speaking, about judiciary, you know.
Well, I want to ask you, too, and I'm sorry, there's a lot so much that we're going to ask you about.
<That's okay. laughs>
So bear with us.
I like these conversations.
As Jeff indicated, there's just so much has happened. It's just yes. It's amazing. And again, you've got a lot of experience in politics. What do you think of the new redistricting the maps that we got, the process we went through? And give us your take on that process and sure. What these maps are going to mean.
So disclosure, my firm did do some work with the Redistricting Commission, some communication work, community engagement work through about September or thereabouts. So just want to be upfront about that. So I can speak from that perspective. It was really challenging to get people to understand it, get it, appreciate the significance of it. I mean, it's not like an easy thing to make plain, right? It, you know, there's all these, you have these communities of interest. Well, what does that mean? We want you to do mapping. I mean, there were so many layers of it that were complex and hard for the average Joe to care about. Then once you get them care about, then you ask them, okay, now we want you to take these several steps, which is, like I said, draw a map, show up at a meeting, send in a comment. So it made it tough. So I still, you know, even as hard as we tried, I wish we still had more people that had participated in that process and impacted the outcome. I have to respect that it was, you know, grassroots generated. But yeah, I would be lying if I didn't say I'm not worried about, you know, the loss of African-American leadership and the capacity to elect African-American leaders.
That's a good segue because I want you to put on your political consultant hat now.
Okay.
And kind of give us your political assessment of the maps, the legislative and congressional. What do you think?
Well, I'll try to do my best. You know, I think the 10th will be probably, you know, one of the more intriguing ones, right? I think it's unfortunate that we're going to have Levin and Haley run against each other. Haley's been pretty aggressive on running money, and she's always had to be sort of the come from behind person, underdog. So Levin's going to have to step it up. You know, he's going to have to work a bit harder, raise more money, and not just say, hey, I got this name. I think he's definitely well-liked. I like him. I, you know, attended an event with him last year, but it's going to be a dogfight, and that's unfortunate. I mean, that's what we've seen play out, though, in Michigan, right? We've been living with this in a different manner for a different reason for several years. So the 12th, I think, well, first of all, I wish Brenda Lawrence had run and or groom somebody to run behind her. People were fairly blindsided by her not running. As we all know, Rashida is a prolific fundraiser, campaigner. So, you know, she definitely uses a bully pulpit several times a day, several times a week. So that's going to make it tough. And but, you know, Janice Winfrey, whatever good or bad you have to say about her, she's still, you know, proved herself to be hard to beat. So, and she'll have the name ID, but then you've got, you know, Kavanaugh in there. So Kavanaugh can look, I mean, so, but that one still is going to be, to me, more intriguing. The 13th, I'm terrified of because there's just so many names in that race. Now there's a consensus committee that's working to help whittle the field down. I hope that they are successful because if I raise six figures and someone said, hey, we want you to step out, I don't know, it'd be a hard sell. So, but I do hope that they can come together and we can get behind.
You mentioned the 10th. The Jedi mind trick that the Republicans and John James have done, it, to me, is astounding. There's this perception that they created early on that that is a district in which John James is likely to win and the Democrats really shouldn't even try. That's kind of the narrative and I've seen in some of the national media, you know, the national political pundits. It makes no sense. John James lost that district in both of his failed runs for the U.S. Senate. Donald Trump won it, but barely. I mean,
I was going to say it was a very narrow.
This is an area where you don't need the perfect Democrat to win it. You just need a Democrat, arguably with a pulse, to compete. Because John James hasn't shown. Mark has a pulse. He lives there. John James hasn't shown to be anything on the field worthy of the hype he's received off the field. He's had two high profile, big money runs for the U.S. Senate. And each time he had his ass handed to him when it was all said and done. I don't know why anybody's afraid of him.
No, I think their calculation is African-Americans are going to be excited about him because he's African-American. And to some degree that did impact, I think, in the last race. I think they were people who didn't really know sort of his true politics or whatever. So there was a lot of effort to make sure that they did. But now, two times over, I have to agree with you. And it is a much narrower gap there than they have represented, for sure.
I'm there too. And I, full disclosure here, I'm Carl Marlinga's lawyer, so I'll make that disclosure. But apropos of Jeff's comment, there are a couple well-known Democrats in that race now. Marlinga, I think, is going to get in.
And he has a pulse.
And he has more than a pulse. And Henry Yanez, the former state representative, current Sterling Heights councilman, is in. And Henry won a contested, competitive district when he was in the state house. So I agree with Jeff that, that was the narrative the Republicans are trying to establish. But I think we're getting some pushback on that as well.
Speaking of disclosure and underdogs, I actually am good friends, and she was very helpful to me with Angela Rogan City, so the Warren City Council member. So I'm excited about her bid.
On the East Side District, Darcy, I did see a poll, you know how valid it is, that actually showed Sharon McPhail leading the field right now.
I saw that.
You can ask your reaction to that.
Oh, my God. So, we have a long history, Sharon McPhail and I. Once debated on the radio, privately folks are like, please, why is she running again? Because, she's run so many times. She's, can be a sort of incendiary candidate, certainly, again, helping to, forcing the vote to be carved up. She would say she would have the best chance. And of course, she should be there. I was really surprised to see her name. I'm told there's some folks who actually reached out to her and encouraged her to run because of her name ID. But, we understand name ID is a factor, but that shouldn't be the only consideration. So, I think that there's some solid candidates in that race, Portia Roberson being one of them, Adam Holier being one of them. But we'll have to see how it plays out. So, like I said, I really hope this consensus committee can make an impact in that, because otherwise, then you might as well just, say, Shree, it's yours,
Yeah, well, the caucus ticket on that, filing deadline's April 19th, withdrawal deadline 3 days later.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's awful hard, as you said, to talk to folks. I mean, these seats don't come open very often. If you're an incumbent, odds are you're going to get reelected and stay there as pretty much as long as you want, as long as you, keep your hands clean. So, yeah, it's tough to try to persuade people to get out of a race like that.
I'm watching for Hanson Clark. I haven't heard his name in a while since Gary Peters beat him. But I think he did live in what would be the 13th now. So that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, I think we're at 8 and counting, maybe more.
So, Darcy, what's your take on the statewide races? Jeff and I do a lot of talking about, we got all these Trump acolytes, right?
I was going to say, that Republican vote is about as crazy as, it's just, I was like, who are these people? It's just bizarre. I mean, the only thing that gives me a little pause is, now I'm blanking his name, the guy who ran the ad during the Super Bowl.
Harry Johnson.
And that just sort of smacked of Snyder, you know what I'm saying, like this potential to sort of cast himself as a moderate, particularly on the heels of a pandemic that has impacted so many small business people. So I could see some people feeling that. I think there will be some degree of small business people who are still mad at Whitmer, right? Now she's getting some help. Again, there's been significant waves of rescue fund dollars that have been out there, grants to help support these businesses. And with the restrictions lifted, that can, you know, help her sort of reframe. So I do think she's off to a good start campaign-wise, though. I mean, you know, she's kind of come out the gate blasting. So, and they absolutely have helped us with all these crazy folks running.
Well, Perry Johnson, I would have agreed with that assessment last week that he was going to try to occupy the Snyder lane, except just the other day, he's now urged all the other Republicans in the race for governor to join him in supporting Matt DiPerno.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Matt's
right.
You know, Matt's support of the big lie, and join
right.
Perry Johnson at Mar-a-Lago with Trump. So it seems like...
Yeah.
Everybody's been trying to dance with Trump in the Republican primary, but this guy seems to be throwing his arms around him and giving him a big kiss. So you True. Can't be Rick Snyder and, you know, climbing up on Trump's back and hoping for, a piggyback ride across the finish line.
Well, then the other thing is, you know, Chief Craig, I think he's going to be, well, he's already being received at least in Southeast Michigan in sort of the same vein that the John James candidacy. He had a horrible kickoff press conference on Belle Isle. People are upset that he said he voted for Trump not once but twice, and then, you know, immediately shifted out the gate to be on the GOP side. He also had, you know, sort of mixed impressions locally anyway, you know, either as a track record or, you know, remember he said that someone tried to carjack him and he had a death threat, you know, some of these sort of crazy things that happen. So I don't, you know, unless there's some outstate misconception. I also, and I may be wrong about this, but I also think that law enforcement candidates always struggle to be the candidate. It's a very tough transition for them to make. They are used to being in charge all the time. So campaigns always have all these different handlers. They want you to, you know, sort of, you know, so there, I just, at least my experience is those are the toughest candidates to get to do what needs to be done to win.
Yeah. I mean, law enforcement candidates in Michigan haven't really had a real successful history. You know, Sheriff Bouchard in Oakland County,
right.
Brooks Patterson, who was very successful in Oakland County.
Right.
He tried statewide a few times, went nowhere.
Yep.
So it's interesting because in some states that law enforcement pedigree is a big deal.
Right.
Michigan voters don't seem to cotton to that too much.
No, I don't think so. And like I said, conversely, the candidates don't necessarily like, you know, sort of the campaign or some aspects of the campaigning. And so it makes it tougher to get them out there like they need to be.
What would seem to make it difficult for Chief Craig is the Republicans have been riding this drumbeat of the increase in crime since Whitmer's taken the governor's mansion and since Biden has been elected president. And if they're going to ride this increase in crime, this spike in crime, part of that is laid at the feet of the police chief in Detroit.
Sure.
You know, it seems their rhetoric is contrary to their preferred candidate, at least their preferred candidate, you know, when he entered the race last summer.
Sure.
Well, Darcy, you know, pull out your crystal ball, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a long time till November.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what do you think are going to be the big issues in the fall? I mean, is COVID going to recede? Is Biden going to, you know, have a little surge now? Who knows what's going to happen with the war in Ukraine? Have any sense of where this thing might be going? Or should we just toss out all the past received wisdom and say, well, maybe this is not going to be a typical midterm? What do you think?
Well, so on the positive, you know, now we can, you know, the campaigns have been somewhat bridled over the last few years because of COVID. As it relates to canvassing, as it relates to how they do GOTV, when they do GOTV. So that will be helpful. That will definitely be helpful to Democrats, grassroots. Our side should be helpful. I think by the president, we've already seen that he's gotten a bump for, you know, pulling the world together around this war. But at the same time, we know the economy, you know, that is what people are going to be dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And the concern I have is if people, A, are frustrated, and B, they don't get excited about either one of them, right? Then that means they stay home. And so that's my fear on the negative. So on the positive, we could have more GOTV than we've had in a very long time, and that could be very helpful. I know that there's lots more grassroots organizing organizations than we've probably ever seen. I think we're a little more inclusive in terms of partnering with other groups. So these are all very positive things, right? It's just, I'll tell you a story. So, you know, I'm a precinct delegate. So I've been a precinct delegate for several years. And I remember canvassing right before the presidential election on the east side of Detroit. And I asked this guy, he came to the door. And I said, hey, I'm just trying to make sure you have a plan to vote. And he said, oh, I already voted. And I said, well, hopefully you got Biden. He said, I didn't vote for president. And I was like, oh my God. But I think part of that, if you remember, to me, that was the most I've ever seen spent trying to get African-Americans to go GOP. Like, they did a series of attack ads that I just don't remember in my lifetime hearing that many courting blacks on the GOP side. And so to me, the net effect to some degree was some people just got disillusioned about both candidates. Right. And so that's my fear, that the struggles on the pocketbook and maybe a lack of zeal for both candidates may make people stay home. But we all have 10 million ballot issues that will also help get people out, from shrooms to, you know, reproductive rights to voting rights. So those are all good motivators too. So
yeah, I'm watching that and thinking, why am I not in the signature gathering business? Because those people are going to be retiring right after 2022. My goodness.
Yeah, you know, Darcy, I think I worry about Democrats. We're great on spotting statistics, right?
Yeah.
Most jobs, biggest economic recovery, all this kind of, but that doesn't really seem to me to tug at people's hearts.
Nope.
In terms of getting them to vote. I mean, if you were advising a candidate, and I'm sure you're going to for this fall, you know, what should they be saying to motivate folks to vote for them? What's their message?
Well, so the new wisdom is that they need to tell us. We shouldn't be telling them, right? And so you do is called deep canvassing or deeper dive canvassing. It's a much more protracted process rather than just do a survey you really have to have like an extended conversation that takes place over 6 months to get to those core issues and let the issues guide you way more than it has before, not, you know, face to face, right? Face to face dialogue over an extended period of time. So, that would have to be the guy. But if it's not relevant to people locally, I just don't see how they're going to get excited about it.
Is it still going to be, as James Carville once famously said, it's the economy, stupid?
Well, of course it has to be that, because again, the state has been impacted and we're looking at all these prices going up now. You know, we still have this gap in the child care front. We have a gap on the senior care front. So, you know, all those things definitely are centered around the economy. So that will absolutely be a factor.
Yeah. And then you have now hanging over for the first time in, you know, more than 30 years, the very real threat of nuclear weapons being used in war, you know, as kind of the wild card little icing on this very difficult to frost cake here as we head into the home stretch of the 2022 election.
I just really worry. People I don't think are into or accepting of sacrifice. I mean, you know, what could happen now? We could see a spike in gas prices, right?
Yeah.
Because of the oil markets.
Yes.
And people are not going to connect that in a positive way with us standing up and standing with Ukraine. They're going to say, you know, it affects my pocketbook.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So I'm not voting for that Democratic president or his people, because again, it's hurt me personally. I just, that really worries me. I mean, the country has become so much more self-absorbed, I think, and frankly, selfish in terms of looking at these things. And it's hard to find a way to appeal to people to be bigger than themselves, to look at the big picture.
Right. And that's why I say you got to, you know, it's, I mean, they always say all politics is local, but you really have to drill down even further in a way I think that that just hasn't been done previously. I just think you just made me think about when I was working on Granholm's campaign and they asked me about doing an ad, you know, they asked me to do a print ad. And so I had this bright idea because I was so consumed by Hurricane Katrina. Right. So I had this bright idea to do an ad, you know, sort of juxtaposing Katrina. And it was just a disaster. People were like, I feel bad for them, but we've got our own problems here. You know what I'm saying? Like, so even though I could be completely empathetic, it's like, yeah, but so I do agree with you, Mark, that we have to, you know, that is, I am concerned about it in terms of, like I said, the pocketbook issues and people, you know, being impacted and being distracted and fed up. And that, you know, when people are less hopeful, I think they're less inclined to want to participate, or they may, you know, internalize some a deeper level of skepticism about whoever's running for office.
Right. And certainly the Republicans are motivated by fear and hate, like they always, and that's what we see. That was Trump was so good at, and so many of these Republican candidates we see, like Caramo or DiPerno. And that's, if they're not overt about it, that's certainly the quiet, the dog whistle message. And sometimes it's more than a dog whistle in terms of what they're appealing to, people's worst instincts.
No, that's the playbook. And right now they're doing it around at the school board level around like CRT. You know, that is the wedge issue for the years, the critical race theory, excuse me. And we're seeing that play out here and across the state.
Well, we've got a big fight in our hands, and we really appreciate you taking the time, Darcy, to be with us today and talk about this wide range of issues. We threw a lot of stuff at you, but we knew you could handle it because of your
hopefully I did all right.
Oh, you're great. You're great. And you're still smiling. So thank you so much, Darcy, for being with us today and sharing your insights on all these topics.
No problem. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Darcy. You take care now.
All right. You too.
That's our time for this week. Our great thanks to Darcy McConnell for her insights on the political scene, not only in Metro Detroit, but in Michigan and throughout the country.
You can be part of the conversation. Send us an email, comments@republicpodcast.com.
And if the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week as we celebrate a year on the air. Our great thanks to Walt Sorg, our producer, and my co-host, Jeff Timmer. It's been a terrific year. Both of you guys, thank you so much. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. We'll see you next week.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on your favorite podcast app. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.